Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Welcome back. This is the 9 a.m. statewide hour of Montana Talks Radio. This is John Jackson. I'm sitting in here with Greg Franks, and we already have a phone call on the line. We've got Niz. Good morning, Niz.
Hey, John. Do you need to take a GoFundMe for getting a phone system for your station? Do you want me to set one up for you?
Could you please do that? Could you please? I mean, welcome to Montana Talks Radio, where we are struggling to maintain 1955 era talk radio standards. Could you please do that for us?
Yeah, that would be great. Hey, you know what? A couple days ago, you had mentioned a professor at Montana State Northern. Her name is Samantha Belemba Brownlee, and she was put on paid leave for a while for her grotesque comments about Charlie Kirk. She was celebrating the death of a U.S. citizen, even though she's a Canadian citizen teaching criminal justice at that university. Well, your governor is allowing her, due to the law that says professors can pretty much say whatever they want on their own time, he is supporting the college to keep her employed. So not only is she staying at that campus after glorifying the assassination of a U.S. citizen, but she's still on paid leave and she's not back teaching yet. So she gets another 2 months of paid leave. So that's what the citizens of Montana are voting for in these local elections. So when you start talking about elections like down in Miami and how only 13,000 conservatives turned out to vote for mayor, this is why. When you have Republicans who aren't Republicans and behaving like Republicans and using the power that they have to get rid of these leftists, in whether it's in power or on the college campuses, people are demoralized and feel like, why should I even go out and vote? So that's kind of the situation that was happening in Miami. They get very comfortable, they get lazy, and Republicans aren't offering anything.
Yeah, I don't understand why professors here at universities here in Montana get special First Amendment rights in that they can say anything they want and not be held accountable for it. That doesn't seem right to me.
Well, it's not. And here's the rub of the whole situation is that we run the Department of Education. There are hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars right now as we speak pouring into these universities. The faucets have not been shut off to these radical Hamas breeding grounds all over the country. That's our fault. We are running the White House. We're running the Department of Education. We have seen almost zero movement in that region. So this is a big problem, and we've already lost a year on this fight. Now, I don't know what President Trump intends to do with Linda McMahon. I don't think she's going anywhere. But I can tell you that as somebody who researches this every single day, she is asleep at the wheel, and we are losing very valuable time. We don't have the luxury to continue to allow these universities to behave in the way they have been.
Thank you very much for the call, Niz. We are at the hard break right there, and we will be.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
On our top story of the day, of the last 24 hours, we haven't hit it since the 6 a.m. hour, but yesterday, U.S. forces seized an oil tanker in the sea off of Venezuela. This oil tanker is what they call a ghost ship, and it's a member of what they're saying is a ghost fleet of these sanctioned ships, tankers, moving Venezuelan, Iranian, and Russian oil against international and U.S. sanctions. Great, great video out there. It's an awesome video. Shows our forces fast roping off of a helo onto the deck of this massive freighter, going forward to the wheelhouse and taking control of the vessel. On board the vessel was estimated 1.1 million barrels of oil, and the vessel itself is worth, what I looked up, even used, $100 million. This is a big, big hit at all of these bad guys around the world. And I tell you, I looked this up too. You know who owns this ship? It's owned by Triton Navigation Corp., a Marshall Islands registered corporation. And it was designated by the U.S. Treasury in 2022 as part of an oil smuggling network supporting the IRGC, that's the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, and Hezbollah, facilitating illicit Iranian oil shipments under the vessel's prior name, Adisa. Who the real owner is Viktor Artemov, a sanctioned Russian oil magnate identified by the U.S. Treasury as the ultimate controller of the vessel. Artemov, who was sanctioned in 2022, oversees a network of these ships that obscure ownership to evade U.S. restrictions on Iranian and Venezuelan oil trade. What they also do is falsify documentation, the ship-to-ship transfers, and they spoof the tracking signals, meaning making it very, very hard for you to track where these vessels go. And it is then managed by Tomoros Global Ventures Limited, a Nigeria-based firm handling day-to-day operations. And they were flying under the flag of Guyana at the time, but they changed flags just any time. This is a really, really murky international organized crime syndicate moving sanctioned oil around the world. It's amazing stuff, and it was an awesome hit for the Trump administration to take this tanker.
Yeah, it was fascinating watching the video of those guys rappelling out of the helicopter and taking it over. And you and I spoke a little bit earlier. I would not be surprised if there's other nefarious things, particularly with the attention being focused on Venezuela. There might be other arms shipments or those types of things involved in these oil containers and that as well.
Well, that's the great thing about Marco Rubio, Secretary of State. He, as a Florida senator, as a Cuban, of Cuban descent, he has been chafing for 20 years now at the dictatorship in Venezuela, the narco dictatorship down there. And here we have, right in our hemisphere, this narco dictatorship that all they dedicate themselves to is sending drugs into the United States, and they kill and torture their citizens. They support Iran and Russia, and you got a president that's finally going to do something about it. But of course, the Democrats don't want they want him sitting right there. They want us to spend $300 billion in Ukraine, but they don't want to do anything about this guy right here in our hemisphere.
And you know, I read other articles that have said that that island right off the coast of Venezuela, they're using that for Hezbollah terrorist training centers, importing people from Africa, funneling them through the Biden porous border. And so who knows who's gotten in here? And it's a good, I think, it, you know, the way I'm reading it, it's Monroe Doctrine 2.0, to where we need to protect this hemisphere. And if to inform folks a little bit what the Monroe Doctrine is, it was set up to where we can protect our shipping lanes, the coastal lines. The Caribbean was a very big factor in that, making sure that foreign enemies could not penetrate going into the Gulf of America and doing damage and affecting our commerce that we have here.
Well, see, and this, everybody took their eye off not only Latin America and drugs as a whole after 2001, after the war on terror, the 9/11, everybody just took their eyes completely off the ball. Nobody wanted to hear about drugs or Latin America anymore. And that's what allowed the entire Chavez revolution to sweep through that continent for 20 years. But now you're seeing it is tipping back over. You've got good leaders in Peru. You've got a new conservative guy coming in Chile. You've got Milei in Argentina. It's all coming back around because the people of South America are just tired of all the drug trafficking, all the corruption, and their economies being thrown right down the crapper by these socialists. You know, Venezuela used to be one of the most richest countries in the whole hemisphere.
They have more oil than just about any other country out there. Another thing that was to go into is Congressman Massey and Mike Lee are introducing legislation. I don't know where it's going to go, but to pull us out of NATO. And they say that we need to be focusing more on our, we need to get past the Cold War era the old Bretton Woods establishment, to where we were protecting all of the shipping lanes, all of the commerce across the entire globe, having our partnerships with other nations such as Europe and so forth, to where we don't, we need to protect ourselves now. We need to protect our own borders. We need to protect our own manufacturing, our own agriculture. And why are we, I think it was Lee, he said in this article I read this morning, why are we supporting socialist nations and risking our boys going to die for?
That's a huge thing. I want to go into that more when we come back from the break, because the whole notion of getting us out of NATO is, I absolutely 100% agree with it. It's a relic of the Cold War. And you know something else, Greg? Those people are not our allies anymore.
They are not.
Montana's elect. Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Back here with Greg Franks in the studio, and he just hit a great topic right before we went to the break, and that's the subject of involvement in NATO, this bill by Massey, and what NATO even means to us here in 2025.
You know, the NATO is a constructed post-World War II to fight the aggression of communism and the Soviet Union. And it's to basically what we did after the Bretton Woods Agreement, which happened right after D-Day in 44. All the governing nations, because they knew Nazi Germany was done, they met at Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, and they had a confab. In the United States, we will take care of the borders. We just want to be able to have we want to be able to have access to having our troops in your nations to protect to fight against the Soviet Union. And they protected the shipping lanes. And that world has changed. That world doesn't exist anymore. There's a fellow, Peter Zion, that wrote several books about a decade and a half ago that talk about the global sphere is changing. America, we're not in the Cold War. Nations are going to start coming back more isolated where they were. Europe is definitely not our ally. They're the largest group of socialist nations out there. I mean, we might even have more in common with Russia and the Russian people than we do with the European people. And why are we dedicating our boys to go to war for them and to defend their borders?
Oh, Hunter, and I've been banging that drum since they kicked off the Ukraine thing, and that's coming up on 4 years here after the new year. That thing has been going on, and that's all you heard about was NATO, NATO, NATO the whole time. But you have watched the European Union for the last, 15 years. They are run by a socialist cabal of a bunch of communist thugs who are in no way our allies. They are actively our enemies. Like you just said a minute ago, we can make a better deal and see more eye to eye with Putin and Russia than we can with these people. And the idea that we're going to jump in to some war with them just because of this agreement, I mean, no way. Absolutely not.
Was it last week? There's a leaked document saying how that with the European Union's internal document, they're saying how that they're going against Trump on this. They need us to go into war. They've been banging the war drums for the last 3 or 4 years, saying we need a war in Ukraine. And quite frankly, what does Ukraine matter to us as far as the national security?
Nothing.
It's a gateway for a southern port for Russia to be able to get their commodities, their oil and gas and stuff out through the Black Sea. But why the European Union is so committed to starting a war in World War III, I don't understand. I actually do understand. But what they're trying to do is, because their economic spending, both France, Germany, England, Italy, Spain, all of the major powerhouses of Europe are in deep, deep financial troubles. And that's not just them. It's us. It's China. It's Japan. All of these economic engines have insurmountable amount of debt, and they're doing the old playbook to where let's start a world war to where we can reshuffle the deck, and where the peasants, we send our peasants' kids to go die, and we're able to rake the system and reset the economic order.
That is 100% dead on, and like I told you at the break, guaranteed. If Kamala Harris had been elected, they would have already kicked off World War III, not even 3 months into her administration. It's all part of a multi-pronged strategy. You know, you got climate change and then illegal immigration and then war. Because not only resetting the economics. But then what's a bigger way to take absolute control of your population is war. What's a bigger emergency like they use in COVID than war? And you remember back, it was probably 2022, 2023, where you had our own senators. You have that idiot Warner from Virginia talking about if somehow the traffic lights went out in Poland, if they were the subject of any kind of EMP or something like this, this would be an Article 5 violation, and we have to go to war against Russia over this. And you remember when the Ukrainians shot one of their missiles and it went off and landed in Poland? They were 24 hours. Joe Biden was calling an emergency meeting of the security union, going to ready to start war over this.
And they don't want to even send their own people. They want to send our people.
Oh, yeah.
They want to send our boys and our girls to fight for them and defend their borders and defend their social system. Look at the rights violations of the freedom of speech that they're having all over Europe. There's cases, lawsuits filed against X just this last week. And, you know, how can we have, if we have nothing in common with these people, why are we committing ourselves to send our children to die for them?
Well, that's a very good point you just made. They levied that fine against Elon Musk over X, and it's like 100 million, pounds? It's a whole lot. And, boy, that was some really bad timing on their part, because here you have Elon Musk, which is one of the best friends to the Republican Party and to Trump himself, and right here when you're in the middle of all these negotiations, you decide to fine one of the richest man in the world and one of the president's friends.
Yeah, and I know the Trump administration said something that there has to be some rules or regulations to where these nations don't have the rights to fine content on American soil. And even though the internet is global, they don't have the authority to do that. And so why are we trying to support these people if they don't support any of our fundamental philosophies?
And that used to be the measure, right? That used to be the measure by how we supported people around the world, is if they demonstrated our democratic values. And what you get people, because, you know, on X, you talk to everybody, right? You can talk to everybody around the world. They'll tell you straight up that that's not a democracy anymore. It's run as a dictatorship by the EU.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's not much. There's not a lot of sovereignty within the European states. It's ran by the EU. You have Macron. You have, I don't even know who the new prime minister of England and Britain is, but you are seeing some changes, though. I mean, the new prime minister of Italy is voicing herself and separating Italy from the EU and their craziness. But getting back to the financial things, the amount of debt and the economic problems that we have out there are really big. And unless we start addressing our spending and getting our house in order for what we're doing, you're going to see more and more of this.
We had one of our members of our spaces that we do every Sunday night say this a couple of months ago, so I absolutely agree with, is that it's probably not so much our actual spending on actual projects. You know, a dollar goes out for a dollar's worth of return. That's driving us into the poorhouse. It is all of the theft, the fraud, and the corruption out here. God knows what the percentage of our debt and our spending out there is, all of that.
It is absolutely astounding. And you look at where these NGOs are, and Aaron and I have had this conversation. He's about Klaus Schwab, the guy out of Wyoming that spends a bunch of money for these liberal causes. He says, oh yeah, but they're billionaires, they can afford it. Billionaires don't spend money without making money. That's how they became billionaires. They don't benevolently throw their cash out there to fund these causes, these radical leftist groups, if there's not some skim on them on the other side. So you look at all the funneling of the money through these NGOs. You look at through these other nonprofits. You look at the fraud and abuse that's going in through the welfare system in Minnesota right now. And it's not just Minnesota. It's systemic across the board. You look at the fraud within the food stamp the system that's out there. We are the funding from the Somalis, we're funding terrorist organizations through those federal dollars. We're funding terrorist organizations in Somalia with our own tax dollars.
You know, we have focused righteously a lot here, right here on this show, on the Somalis and all of the illegals, the Afghans and the Iraqis and all these people that are dedicating themselves to stealing our money and defrauding our systems out here. But I think we've lost sight of one important thing. It says, and I use the analogy, what if your kid went off from your house and left the front door open? Now, you come home after work and all the stuff's stolen out of your house, right? Who are you mad at here? I mean, of course, the robbers that did it, but who allowed the robbers in? Your kid did this. And that's the kid or our politicians. They are not putting the requirements and the hurdles in all of these things to stop the fraud. I mean, right off the bat, any piece of federal dollars, you should have to fill out all this paperwork. And then individually, if you want any of these benefits from our welfare system, you have to show up somewhere in person with two forms of ID and all the requisite paperwork to get any of this stuff. That's how they're defrauding, is they're doing it online. That's how they're defrauding all of these dollars.
No accountability, no voter verification, citizen verification. All throughout, I mean, it goes back to the lack of a porous border, not caring who's coming into our country, not doing proper background checks and vetting those that come in. And we don't know how many of these bad characters have been brought in here. Is it 10 million? Is it 20 million? 30 million? We have no idea. The Trump administration is trying to address this issue. But we need more help from the legislative bodies to help get stuff done.
What do they do? What do we send them there to do? They're pass laws, pass budgets, write budgets. They have two jobs, right? Can't you write into the budget, this is how this money will be spent, these are the requirements to get that money, and here are the ways the money will be taken away from you, and then start arresting people for defrauding this money. I'm telling you, right now, President Trump and Pam Bondi and Cash Patel could topple the entire Democrat infrastructure in this country.
They could if they just target these NGOs, go after who has been pilfering the dollars from the tax dollars, and cut off that money laundering scheme. I mean, where do you think Act Blue is getting all this mysterious tens of millions of dollars of donations that people, you ask the person, did you donate $3,000 to Act Blue? I donated $10 to them 2 years ago. And so they're filtering this money back through the system into the Democrat Party, and Democrat Party swindling this money into these other groups like Somali immigrants who are funneling money into terrorist groups. Where does it stop?
It doesn't seem like it's going to start anywhere. One of my favorite examples is our boy John Kennedy, the senator out of Louisiana. I mean, he's got the best sound bites out there, not by them Democrats. And he votes with leadership every single time.
Yep.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
President Trump and Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins announced a new federal initiative, the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, which they say is designed to stabilize the nation's farm economy. The plan allocates $12 billion for crop producers and includes a one-time bridge payment that the administration said will help offset temporary trade disruptions and rising production costs. Crops that are covered include barley, chickpeas, corn, lentils, oats, peas, sorghum, soybeans, wheat, canola, flax, rapeseed, safflower, and others. Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins.
We are going to be effectuating an $11 billion bridge payment to our farmers. The money will move by February 28th of 2026, but by the end of this month, so just in the next couple of weeks, every farmer that is able to apply for it will know exactly what that number looks like. So as you are going to your lender, as you are working to ensure and understanding what you can plant for next year, you will have that number in hand. And we will continue to talk to our farmers, continue to understand exactly what this looks like and what is necessary.
Funding for specialty crops like potatoes was not announced, but USDA says they've set aside $1 billion for specialty crops, but are working on the language. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Hey, everyone.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, right. I know Greg Franks wanted to get into the big subject out here among a lot of people is the coming of AI. And with AI, the coming of their big data centers, the power and the money that's going to be required for this. What do you got for us on that?
I think, you know, we have several of these companies looking at coming in and doing AI data centers in Montana. I think it's great. It's job creation. It's construction jobs. It's a higher tax revenue for the counties and the state. There's a location that they put in for property taxes, so it will offload the responsibility, hopefully, on the residential side of things. But as I've talked with members of the legislature, the PSC, and even the governor, that one of the most important things that we need to make sure is that this all happens behind the meter. And what that means is that these data centers cannot be coming in here and tap off of our transmission lines and jack up our energy consumption where they're competing with the consumers as far as what the rates are. And I think that the there's some good sense about the within our leadership saying, okay, we need to make sure that we protect the consumers and the tax rate payers, and we can't do a repeat of what we did with deregulation that we did 25 years ago to where the consumer and the shareholders and everybody else got messed up with what Montana Power did. So I think it's important that we do this the right way and that we're attentive to it. And Andrew Kriegel was talking about the energy production, but we need to make sure we're open for business, but we need to make sure that we protect the consumers, taxpayers, and ratepayers in the state.
So you're saying, in your opinion, these places need to have their own independent power source.
They have to have their own energy source to go with. So behind the grid, is it either a gas power plant, is it SMR, small modular reactors? I don't think there's enough reliable energy in wind and solar in order to perform this. There's that group out of Broadus. They're looking at solar and wind up there. Well, my question is, they're right underneath one of the largest transmission lines in the entire Northwest. And so when they aren't getting the right solar and wind, particularly this time of year when the sun isn't out very much, where are they going to get their energy? They're going to draw it from these power transmission lines. And we just need to be very careful that we are protected, that our representatives and the people in the PSC protect the consumer.
Now, when you made your concerns known, was that well received?
Yeah, it is.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's well received, and you know, and so you just have to be conscientious of this. You can't go in there and say, "Okay, we're going to put in this rate, and I'm going to make all this money." You have to be conscientious of your neighbors and do it right. And so, I think that's the overall mentality of the folks I've visited with, that's what their objective is. But I think it's a great opportunity to have these come into Montana, and we have some of the lowest energy costs in the nation, and I think we need to maintain that, and we need to create more energy.
You were telling me at the break that over in Europe they have a member of parliament.
I heard that on the radio yesterday. So I can't. I think it's Hungary. I can't remember what country. Maybe Belarus. But they actually have an AI member of parliament. AI is their member of parliament.
How can that be?
I don't know.
How would that be even according to anyone's constitution? Do you think, you know, right among the first qualification to serve in a government body was you would have to be a human?
Well, you look at the advent. I mean, one of the things is, okay, so the hiring, the problems with the jobs coming up with AI, there's a lot of things. And one of the things that people talk about is particular law firms. You don't need a paralegal now because you can use AI, and there's particular AI coding that you write into that works within the more specifically in your industry. So you don't need paralegals as much as anymore. And then some people say you won't even need a lawyer to write your will. You can have AI drive it for you. Then you sit there, okay, if you don't need lawyers to do that, then do you need judges? Do you need judges to be there? And if we don't need judges and AI takes over that, then do we have a Supreme Court? Then it pulls into the whole thing, is there a feeder system? I'm not defending attorneys by any stretch. I mean, you know, there's only a few good ones. David Noble might be one of them. But where's our entire constitutionality? And if we're going to hand over our power and our position to a computer, of which some people are saying that they're creating their own version of a god through some of these models, that's a dangerous thing, and we need to have a hard conversation with our elected leaders and make sure that there's safeguards put into place. This can be, and we have to have AI to maintain our competitiveness against the rest of the world. but we have to do it the right way. And I don't know if those conversations are happening. So I try to do my part to make sure that, you know, at least we're, the consumers are protected. And we need to have these conversations. Okay, what is this going to look like? And it's at such a breakneck speed of trying to get these data centers in, but we're not having the conversations.
It's the modern day version of 2001 Space Odyssey. Right, you remember when the human finally decided he wanted to do a thing and the computer comes back and says, I'm sorry, Dave, you can't do that. I'm not programmed for that. And you know the amount of people, I'm sure you know them. I know a bunch of people out here that have been defrauded out here on their phones, their laptops. They've had their identity stolen, had their money stolen from them through these hackers. The other day, I've got on my phone, I've obviously got Twitter, X, and then I've got Instagram. And somebody followed me on Twitter. I followed him back, which I do with a lot of people. Just hit follow back. You don't even know who they are. Next thing I know, I went over a couple hours later. I go over to Instagram. There is that person on my Instagram feed. And I looked. I don't have any permissions between the two apps. But on my phone, it knew. This stuff, I would tell everybody out there, don't do any kind of your personal banking or financing or any of that stuff over that phone. Don't do it. Because that's what the apps are spying on you.
They're tracking everything. Apple's probably a little bit more secure than because they're very big within the privacy. But you still have to go in there and you have to move all these check marks and stuff to make sure that you're protected. I mean, we've all had this happen. You're having a conversation with somebody and all of a sudden these ads start popping up on your phone, particularly talking about what you're referencing. It's so we're in a different world. And so that's why, you know, our calls haven't been coming in because how do you get an email and go to Teams. So we would love that GoFundMe to get the phone systems back up and going for Aaron's show. It's just, you know, we just have to be careful. We have to be cognizant of and be aware of it. And going back to my original in the 8 o'clock hour, we are the problem. We need to be the solution. We need to be active. We need to participate. And even as busy as our lives are, if you can just, if the conservative right and the Christian right and the evangelicals and the conservative Catholics, John Graves with Voices of America, out of Dallas, Texas. He's been on Aaron's show several times and getting involved, creating networks with people, just doing something to contribute to back to the society that you're given and ensure this that your future generations have the freedoms that we have.
I mean, you grew up, you know, we're similar ages. We grew up in a time where a lot of people weren't involved in politics, and it really kind of didn't matter because, you know, at the end of the day, both parties, be they Republicans or Democrats, at the end of the day, they were all patriots, and there was somewhere in a smoke-filled room somewhere, there were some really serious, sober men making sure the trains ran on time.
You assume they were sober.
Yeah. We'll say serious, semi-sober. You know, serious, semi-sober. But they made sure the trains ran on time, and they were acting in America's best interest. Man, those days are gone. I'm telling you. And with these Democrats, they are an enemy to the national security of the United States. They are all about our destruction. That's why everybody, you cannot be disassociated from politics anymore, not if you want to maintain your lifestyle.
You do. I implore your listening audience, you can't just listen to the radio and think that you're contributing with something. So, you know, find your legislative candidate, give them $10, give them $100, whatever you're able to do, offer to go door to door for them. Try to raise some capital for them so that they can run, because then you're the ones that they deal with. If you contact your legislature, he's going to know you donated something. He's going to listen to you. He's going to do it. But you said you've just recently. I've been involved in politics since I was a kid. I've been doing this since the 70s. So yeah, this has just been a part of my life and my activity, and I enjoy it. I like studying it. I don't know how to exactly say this, but I can't implore people enough. Our very sake of our nation depends upon you getting involved and getting active.
And like you were just saying, what can you do? The very, very least you can do is put a yard sign in your yard. Find out who the candidates are that people need to vote for, and put that sign in your yard. That the recognition, people's recognition of a last name or a face goes a long way at the voting booth.
And vote. And vote. I mean, we talked about the Miami mayoral race where voters didn't turn out. We can look at the Billings mayoral races. Conservative voters didn't turn out. And, you know, there is a problem that happened in 18, that happened in 22. The Trump voters, if he's not at the head of the ticket, they don't turn out. And Trump can't solve our nation's problems by himself. We need other people elected in there. So, you know, those people that say, oh, I'm not going to vote, Trump can't be your only guy you vote for.
I've voted in every ballot I've ever got. I've scratched that oval.
My pizza.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
The big subject on everybody's mind, certainly here in Montana recently, has been property taxes. You've got a lot of people across the state that see their homes that they bought 30 years ago, and they're on a fixed income now, and with the craziness in real estate prices throughout Montana over the last few years, now they have reached a level of their property taxes that's driving them out of their homes. And what it is an unrealized gain. You're being taxed on a gain that you've never realized, which is right off the bat wrong. That should not be happening. But I know you wanted to weigh in on the property tax thing, right?
Everybody blames the state government for the property taxes, and of course they are the ones that receive it and administer those tax funds. But they need to realize that the majority of those tax funds go back into their local communities. Over 50% of property taxes received goes back into the school district. So when you're voting for mill levies, or you're voting for this or that, or you're not holding your school district accountable, and it goes back to our point where that's why it's so important for these lower races, these school board elections and city council elections. That's why it's important that we look at moving those dates of the elections to where it's either in June or in November, to where of every other year, even year, to where that people turn out and vote. And they take these situations seriously. Because if we look at our property taxes, and the majority of our property taxes is going for the water treatment facility, it's going for the landfill, it's going for the school district, and it's evident that these groups need to be held accountable for the way that they're spending their money. And there's been some discussion that we need to have some level of a Doge-style audit done to these local municipalities and these local school districts to make sure that they're spending our money wisely. And they're not and I'm not accusing anybody here, but you go to other school districts, you hear stories about how they're taking these expensive junkets for their entire administrative staff to go down to Vegas, and they're spending tens of thousands of dollars of taxpayers' dollars. I'm not saying that's happening here in Montana, but we need to make sure that we are responsible, or that we have responsible stewards of our tax dollars. And if you can put checks and balances within their spending and making sure that those spending dollars are actually going into the classroom. There's something like $17,000 a student per classroom. If you have 20 students, that's $340,000 per classroom that dollar's going into the classroom. What's the teacher getting? 50, 60, 70, 80,000? Where is the other $280,000 going? Yeah, there's sports. Yeah, there's building structures. But you look at their maintenance of the buildings, and that there has to be a way that you look for. I'd like to know what their maintenance cost per square foot is, and do a comparable to what other commercial real estate commercial managers do with their real estate. And so these are the things that the people need to know, and it should be public, it should be open, and that way we can make informed decisions when we go to the ballots.
Oh, make me king of the world, make me governor, and I issue that executive order day one. We are impaneling a Doge commission to look at every sector. But see, no one wants that. No Republicans, no Democrats, nobody wants it, because they like having that money, all of that out there to tap when they want to. They like having it unaccountable so that they can spend it here, spend it there, spend it the other way. The last thing they want is a strict, tight accounted for budget.
Well, and then making sure that the money is being followed between departments as well, that the money's following the code to where it goes, isn't transferring between one department to the other, to where it's, as I always called it, it's like a vacant shell game. You've seen those on the New York subways, guys shoveling it out, and it's a fixed game. And there's no way for even some of the city council members or the school board members to even know, because the finances are so complicated, where those dollars are going. And so I think it's important that we have accountability within our legislature and our elected officials within the city and local governments.
You mentioned a second ago about the mill levies. That's just something that's drove me crazy for years, because I've called Montana home now for coming up on 26 years. And every 6 months, it seems like it's just nonstop with the next thing you know, there's a mill levy on here. And I told Aaron Flint here a couple months ago, I can't remember ever voting for not one of them. Because every single time, if you ever look at those things, if you ever read them, it's all just another tax or another way to somehow take away a liberty or a freedom you have. And it's like, no. And you people, you want to come at me. I mean, I'm a retired federal law enforcement agent. But you want to come at me now after I've paid all these taxes, and you want to say now you need more money for the police, or you need more hospitals or schools and all this other stuff? No. Those are the very first dollars of my taxes you should have spent the money on.
They do a safety mill levy here in Billings, and you presume it's to put cops on the street, but there's 7 administrative staff people. And I know I'm saying those are important, but that's not what the people are paying for. And they want safe streets. They want to be able to walk down the streets and not being accosted or dealing with the vagrancy or whatever else. They want accountability, and they want their dollars. And I think they also need to look at, with the jail situation here in Billings, I've said this to people as well, why are we looking at this as a need problem, as far as just coming in trying to fix a problem with an extra 300 beds? Why don't we look at the grander scale of the need and the demand for prisons out there, and why don't we build one, and a large one, a 2,000-bed facility, where we lease it out, and it's a bond then to where it generates incomes for the community, creates jobs, as long as those people don't stay here.
Been talking about that same subject for 26 years here, and it's never been done. Hey, thanks for coming
in,
Greg. Good time today, and we'll be back tomorrow again for the Friday version of Montana Talks.
History shows.